Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody, to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you here today. Glad to be here with you all. I don't know why I'm saying co-host at this point, but I guess it's just because my name is second in the title, and I don't think Joe or Silk flows as well as Silk or Joe. So, you know, I'm going to go ahead and leave it to Jane Silk that she did a good job with that title, even if she has not been hosting as much as being the main host would warrant. However, appreciate all the work she does at the Main Street Radio Network, and we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. If it weren't for them, well, then this program wouldn't exist. I just said that. Some of their clients don't like the content, so they support us nonetheless. The company does, so we appreciate that. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Main Street Radio Network can be found at mainstreetradionetwork.com, and so can previous editions of the show if you want to check them out. And you can find them on you can find the Alan Nathan Show up there on mainstreetradionetwork.com, but you can also find the Alan Nathan Show on alannathan.com, which is what I was just about to say, but I was about to say you could do the find my show up there as well, which would have been stupid. I'm not up there. It's entirely independent because the Alan Nathan Show has been around a little bit longer than this show. In fact, it's, like twice as old at least. So we are on social media, though, on under Main Street Radio Network's accounts at Facebook on Main Street Radio Network, on Twitter at Main Street Radio, on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, at Main Street Radio Network, and also on Getter, G-E-T-T-R.com, at Silk or Joe Show. And speaking of social media, New York State has just declared, the city or the state? I don't know, I literally just saw the headline a second ago. New York City, okay. They have declared social media to be a health hazard. Well, that's hard to argue, but the government is really stretching the definitions of what constitutes a health hazard here. You know, it's not just stuff that a doctor might deal with, a medical doctor. Now they're talking about social media and guns as health issues, and climate change as a health issue, too. So what they do is they'll declare all this random crap to be a health issue, such as going to Getter, G-E-T-T-R.com at Silk or Joe Show. That's a health hazard now, apparently. I mean, I always knew it, but it's certainly hazardous to my health doing my job and getting paid for it, right? No, it's actually hazardous for my probably my heart health, stomach health. You know, I'm going to get ulcers and palpitations from all the stressful news that I read every day that I bring to you all. So I guess in that manner, it could technically be considered unhealthy and a health hazard. But then again, the evening news is a health hazard by that measure. But leave it to New York City and Democrats to, while their city is being flooded with illegal immigrants, what do they come up with as the solution? Gee whiz, maybe social media is the problem. We'll just, all of these resources that we say we don't have to handle this influx of illegal immigrants, we're actually going to use some of these non-existent resources to create committees and stuff to handle the social media health hazard. Left-wing thinking right there. I guess they're just going to tax people even more. So I just wanted to get into that before I got into the rest of it, though. Actually, the main topic I wanted to open up with was what's going on over at Homeland Security. It's not much better than New York City, I'll tell you that. They have prayer candles depicting Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas, referring to him as Santo Mayorkas. Now, left-wing nuts that pray to the government are running Homeland Security. Homeland Security workers post Santo Mayorkas crap on social media, too. No wonder New York City declared social media a health hazard. You see that kind of thing on social media, you're going to have a heart attack right then and there. Oh, these are the guys protecting our country? These guys praying to the Homeland Security Secretary? That's a problem. And the workers, you know, post a lot of this stuff on all over social media. And the alleged reason, though, is that he is generous with our taxpayer money and pays them not to work. Got that? Taxpayer-funded employees literally are worshiping a man for giving them taxpayer money for not only not doing their jobs, but not even coming into work. Homeland Security employees, of all people, think it's great that they can leave America unprotected. Then again, Homeland Security's only job these days is calling Republicans terrorists, and that's something all of them already do in their free time for fun. In fact, Homeland Security used a grant program intended to combat terrorists called the Targeted Violence and Terrorism Prevention Program to pay activists to write blog posts that criticize Trump and other conservatives under the guise of media literacy, exact words from them. So Homeland Security, not only are they paying people not to work, they're paying people to blog about the Biden administration's political opponents, and that leads to Homeland Security folks worshipping Mayorkas. If there is a terrorist attack in this country, it is entirely on them. this is the job that they're doing there. Hey, no wonder New York City wants people to stay off social media and declare it a health hazard. That's how you find out about stuff like this. The Democrats themselves posting about it. We've seen this, though, with the Libs of TikTok, a Twitter account. It's just someone who's posting videos of liberals. That's it. That's all they're doing. And they've been accused of hate speech, hatred, racism, bigotry, smearing the left, etc. But all they're doing is posting videos of liberals being liberals. And that's enough to set the left off. So it's no wonder then that if they think that it's a shame and bigoted to show liberals being liberals on Twitter, it's no wonder they would say that social media is unhealthy in general and you should just avoid it. Oh, boy. It's what a country we live in, where you have prayer candles to the Homeland Security Secretary, where a city flooded with homeless drug addicts and now illegal immigrants that they can't pay for is paying to say for people to say social media is a health hazard and paying them to figure out solutions to that health hazard. Like, just Democrat priorities for you right there. It's very out of touch with reality. It kind of actually reminds me of this video I saw earlier this morning, in fact, from Jonathan Cho. He's a reporter that did a lot of reporting on the left-wing activists and all that. He was going through I don't know when this video was made, by the way. I have absolutely no clue. I didn't look at the date. I just remember it just popped into my head. I didn't think I'd be talking about it, okay? Sorry. But he was going through the remains of that Seattle occupied zone that I keep mentioning, where the left decided to seize a few blocks of the city of Seattle and secede from the United States, and we had armed guards preventing representatives of the United States from entering into that area that they took for themselves. And it only ended after they murdered a couple of black kids, even though they had been beating, robbing, raping people in that district that entire time. And police actually could not respond to any of that because they wouldn't be allowed in because it was declared autonomous zone. In fact, they actually said, "We were out of this country. We're not part of it anymore because you're all racist capitalist pig dogs." So this Jonathan Cho, he was walking through the remains of it. So obviously this was sometime after 2020, and I didn't see too many people in masks, so it was probably after 2021 as well. And it is just absolutely trashed. And he's talking about how they routinely find dead bodies in there. And there's just a massive problem with drugs all over the place, vandalism all over the place. It's just an absolutely nasty place that you wonder how a human can exist. Maybe a cockroach, but not a human. And they keep coming across liberal activists whose only concern isn't the filth that's around them or all the dead bodies that keep popping up because of their super permissive policies towards homeless people. Rather, their only concern was this person, Jonathan Cho, filming stuff, might be a right-wing infiltrator. That's it. That's the only thing they cared about. They would rather live in squalor that probably, honestly, a cockroach wouldn't even live in, than have a right-wing infiltrator come amongst them. And that's the sort of mentality we actually see among mainstream Democrats, not just the radical left in Seattle, Washington. For example, in New York City, where social media has been declared a health hazard, where illegal immigrants are treated like kings, they have decided that the biggest problem isn't how to fund all that, and isn't the fact that they are drawing money from programs that help American citizens. Rather, they've decided that the biggest problem is Trump, and that's why they keep voting for these prosecutors there, who they don't promise to go after a crime. They promise to go after Trump. That's how they get in. Alvin Bragg, Letitia James, all them, that crowd, they campaign on how badly they will get Trump. And then when it comes to real crime that's plaguing the city, they don't give a crap. Unless they can use it to help their narrative of anti-white supremacy or something, then they'll throw the book at the person. But if it's like a black-on-black thing, black-on-white thing, they couldn't care less. They'll probably dismiss the case or not even bring charges. And certainly no one's going to be getting jail time for it. That's just the way it is in New York City, and that's how Democrats feel about it. They would rather have someone who does all that but goes after Trump than have someone that actually keeps them safe. And maybe this is just this sickness on the left that they feel that whatever Trump and the right have is worse than what they see out the window every day. It's not the case. The right actually kind of wants to improve all that, but they have just been convinced that I don't know, living in absolute squalor or living in a crime-infested hellhole is a lot better than having Trump in charge of the country for some reason. They're just outright terrified of him. And so terrified, in fact, that they keep making stuff up about what he might do. You know, he had Whoopi Goldberg on The View a few weeks ago saying that he'll put everyone in concentration camps that are opposed to him. He never said anything of the kind. In fact, there was a poll done that showed Democrats, 45% of them are the ones that want to put people in concentration camps, not Trump. They have projecting there. Maybe that's part of it, though. Maybe they feel that Trump, if he gets in office, might do to them what they want to do to him, and they're just absolutely terrified of the tables being turned. And that's why they would rather live in squalor and crime-infested hellholes than live under Trump, because they're just absolutely so terrified that Trump will bring to them what they are trying to bring on to the right. All right, folks, we got more Silker Joe Show coming up after this break. I do not have any prayer candles for you to light during this break, but, you know, candles are cool to light. I light a bunch myself, so have fun with that. You got 5 minutes or so, and we'll be right back.
Wine Country by rising country star Hannah Ellis. After 10 years of carving out her own space in Music City, the Kentucky native now introduces her debut album, That Girl, available now. Named by Rolling Stone Country as an artist to watch and a CMT Listen Up artist, Hannah Ellis has appeared on the Grand Ole Opry several times and toured with stars such as Billy Currington, Gavin DeGraw, and Carly Pierce. That Girl reveals a seasoned songwriter embracing her small-town roots, her real-life romance, and her relatable artistic voice. Hannah Ellis told us about the inspiration for the new album.
The heart of country music is storytelling. Life itself is the inspiration behind this record. Whether it's my sister's breakup, my insecurities, or falling in love, I'm just living my life with a pen and a microphone.
That Girl is now available wherever you get music. For more, visit HannahEllisMusic.com.
From debut author Carolina Ixta comes an unforgettable new young adult novel, Shut Up, This Is Serious, tells the story of two Latina girls growing up in East Oakland, who face a world full of messy complexities as they try to navigate their high school years. Belen wants the normal teen stuff, to hang out with friends, experience love, or maybe even have a boyfriend. But nothing is normal in her East Oakland community. Her father left her family. She's at risk of not graduating. And Letty, her religious best friend, is pregnant by the boyfriend she hasn't told her parents about. Weighed by a depression she can't seem to shake, Belen sees her other classmates getting ready for college. But what future is there for girls like her? Author Carolina Ixta.
Shut Up, This Is Serious deals with topics such as racism, generational trauma, and teen pregnancies, though it's also about the fierce and intimate uplifting power of friendship and chosen family.
Shut Up, This Is Serious is now available wherever books are sold.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give him a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve, it's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silk or Joe Show, everybody. We are joined now by Eric Ruark. He is Director of Research at Numbers USA. Eric, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to have you. So, in the last segment, I managed to get into a little bit about illegal immigration and how sanctuary cities seem to have invited this problem upon themselves. However, there is a poll coming out now that shows Americans actually are more and more concerned about immigration.
That's true. That it was it's a Harvard-Harris poll, which is a very reliable. I know people are, you know, genuinely and rightfully so in some cases skeptical about what they see in polls. But this is a poll. You know, they've done immigration questions in the past. They're polling races. Very, very good polling outfit. And, you know, there's a lot of talk in New Hampshire and Iowa recently about how Republican voters are turning out and their top issue is immigration. But this is all voters. So it's across the board. And we're seeing that. You mentioned the sanctuary cities. New York, Chicago are good examples. These are predominantly Democratic-leaning areas. They're unhappy. And so, and in one group in Chicago, Black Americans is suing the federal government because of what's going on. And it's not that, you know, if you listen to politicians or at least the Democratic leaders in D.C., it's sort of, well, these are only the MAGA extremists who are concerned about the border. That's not the case, and it's not been the case for decades. So this is a widespread problem as American voters view it. And the reason it's the number one issue isn't because they support what's going on from the president. It's that they want what's going on to end. They want the border secured and they want this flow of illegal immigration to stop.
Yeah, it's odd how the Democrat Party has changed its views on immigration. Like President Biden and Barack Obama, for example, you know, you can go back to 2006. Yeah, they sound like outright hawks on immigration back then. So just this, the policy has changed and even their voters are wondering what the heck happened.
Yeah, that's true. We look back, some people look back, you know, at Bush or Obama presidencies and think, wow, that was a lot better. And it was, you know, they were good on the issue when it comes to stopping illegal immigration or, importantly, cracking down on employers. You know, the magnet, the employers who hire people illegally are the magnets that draw a lot of people into the U.S. But we've never seen anything like this. You can't downplay the extent of the crisis that we've seen from day one under this administration. This is historic. And the Biden administration either touts that, well, this month wasn't a record month for illegal crossings, or when it is, like December was, there's like, well, this isn't unusual, as if you can compare this to any time in the past besides previous months of the administration when it comes to the flow over the border. And, you know, this isn't because of incompetence or, you know, that they don't have the resources. This is deliberate and willful on the part of the administration. They have the tools. They're not using them. They're defying Congress. They're also claiming that they have authority to create new legal pathways, which, of course, they do not. And Congress needs to step up here. I know we're having some court fights going on, but those take sometimes years to play out. Congress needs to step up, and the House has by passing H.R. 2, which is a very good bill. The Senate is what we're seeing, and Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, the Republicans have backed off of what was, by all reports, a very bad deal, sort of rubber stamping what Biden's doing. So it's going to come down to really a budget fight. If the president's going to say, I'm going to shut the government down to keep the border open, and then the Republican going to say, no, we're not going to fund the government until you, unless the border is secure. That's really where we're at right now. And going into an election year, I think the political pressure really is on President Biden and the Democrats. As we've mentioned, these policies aren't popular, even among Democratic voters. So it's hard for them to make the case that they should continue.
And it's odd that they would have just, especially in an election year, such a seemingly willful defiance of their own voters towards the detriment of not just their own party, but also the country at this point, and then just come out with their bold-faced lies like, oh, yeah, the border is secure. There's nothing going on here. And like they're so obvious about it too. You know, they go down to some, anytime they make an official visit to the border towns, you hear about how they clean it up for the official pictures to be taken, and you even get to see before and after pictures taken from the same angles.
That's true. And, you know, what we're seeing, and it seems right now that we're going to have a rematch of the race between President Biden and former President Trump. So, you know, people who look back at the Trump administration understand that the border was largely under control. There was more things that President Trump could have done. But when you compare it to what happened day one in the Biden administration, I mean, effects are obvious. The Biden policies are obvious. And trying to sort of, you know, referencing the Potemkin village, right, where you go down and there's nothing to see here. That's, I don't think that's going to play out, because the effects of what's happening at the border, you know, the flow of illegal immigration across the border, is being felt in communities across the United States. And so the argument that the Biden administration is trying to make is, don't worry, there's nothing to see here. People are seeing it every day, whether it's in the public school system, in the hospitals, or simply, you know, people who are showing up and have no place to stay, to live. They're seeing it in crime across the country. Most people are coming here to work, but people who want to, you know, do bad things, either, you know, if they're parts of a criminal gang or they're on the terrorist watch list or what have you, they're getting in the same way as people who want to come in and work illegally, right? And so the Biden administration can make that argument. I don't think it's a very convincing one, particularly when you're running against someone who has a proven track record of successful border enforcement. You know, and I think that's why you're going to see distraction, right? It's not really about immigration. Look over here, distract voters from what, you know, is their main concern. And that's going to be a difficult, I think, path for Biden and the Democrats to follow, is don't worry about what affects you most right now. Worry about what we're telling you should be concerned with. That's difficult to run that way.
Yeah, I remember actually someone said something similar on, I forgot, one of the hosts I think it was a Michi Alcindor who said this on MSNBC or something in 2022 with the midterms coming up. She was talking about how do we convince the voters that January 6th is more important than food on their table. I guess that's what they're doing now. How do we convince voters electing Democrats is more important than handling this immigration problem that they're not handling?
Yeah, that shows a disconnect, right, between what the priorities are in Washington, D.C., and what the concerns are of voters across the country. And this is definitely what we're seeing in the Senate, where, okay, well, we'll come to a deal, you know, even if it's a bad deal on the border, while we then move on to our real priorities, which seem to be funding Ukraine and Israel. And, you know, Numbers USA doesn't take a position on anything but immigration, but our position on the border is, this is not something you bargain away. It's not at the bottom of the list of priorities. It's at the very top, and it's not something that you sort of say, "Well, we'll get, you know, we'll cut a deal and pretend to secure the border while we, you know, fund our other priorities." Either you secure the border or you don't, and that stands on its own. And right now, it's not on the list of priorities, at least for the Senate leadership. And in the House, they're standing strong against it so far, and they have to maintain that position, because this isn't going to fix itself, and certainly Biden administration is going to take any steps to end the crisis on its own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'll need a strong push from the voters out there, and we really need to let our leadership know this is the kind of thing we want. We need border security. We don't really care about this other stuff. You know, it might be a priority to you, but if you want to keep your job, you got to answer to us, right?
Yeah, we the people. I mean, we the people keep sending the elected representatives back who are doing this. So we need to change, right? It's up to us to make the change.
All right, Eric Ruark, Director of Research at Numbers USA. Thanks for being on the Silker Joe Show. Listeners, we have more coming after this break.
It's become an annual headache for retailers. After the Christmas shopping frenzy, what to do with a post-holiday wave of customer returns? Last year, US retailers spent more than $7 billion processing returned items. But new research has found that providing more personalized shopping options could protect retailers against losing money in 2024 by reducing the volume of returns and essentially reducing waste. Here to tell us more about this is Megan Hostetler, Director of Product Marketing at SAP and Marsys Customer Engagement.
Our research found that over half, that's 54% of consumers, do their absolute best to avoid retailers that charge to return an item. We know this is an ever-occurring problem. And for me as a consumer, if we receive a more tailored and personalized customer experience, the volume of these returns will drop. This research by SAP Amarsys Customer Engagement will launch at NRF in 2024. To learn more, visit amarsys.com/NRF.
CES is always a proving ground for breakthrough technologies and global innovators, and I'm working with some great brands to share the latest and greatest. The S8 Max V Ultra from Roborock is redefining how we clean our homes. The deep cleaning capabilities and self-maintenance features make cleaning more convenient. Online protection experts McAfee have unveiled their new AI-powered deepfake audio detection technology. Known as Project Mockingbird, this technology will be a reliable resource for consumers amidst the rise of malicious AI-generated material online. Tonies are a great screen-free educational toy option for children. Pop any of the Tonies on top of the Tony box and they'll play a variety of stories, songs, and lessons that can develop children's emotional intelligence with age-appropriate tech. The X-Real Air 2 Pro AR glasses are a great option for gaming, working at a desk, or incorporating augmented reality apps into your day-to-day life. And because they look like normal sunglasses, they'll fit right into your pocket and blend seamlessly into your day. For more, check out stephaniehumphrey.com.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figueroa, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean. And there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe here, sitting in today. Well, why did I say sitting in? It's my show. Now, that's because I do the Al and Nathan show and as well, and often I'll say sitting in for him because that's what I do for that. In fact, I guest hosted earlier this week for Alan. If you want to listen to that, you just go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com and find the show for the January 24th. There's 2 hours of that as opposed to 1 hour of this program. Again, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And of course, if you follow me on Getter, GETTR.com at Silker Joe Show, then you would have seen that I guest hosted for Alan up there as well. I try to, within a few hours of hosting anyway, get a notification up there that I am hosting for Alan that week or that day or whatever. All right, so what's derailed me is this, I was going into something else. I have no idea what it was now, but because I minimized my notes in order to call this up when I just saw this headline from Fox News. Blue state's bag ban meant to protect environment backfires at staggering rate. So what happened was in New Jersey in 2022, to save the earth, do their part, be a planeteer, you can be one too. So what they did was they banned single-use plastic bags at grocery stores. They figured, okay, these things are take forever to rot away at the dump or whatever, so we'll just ban their use. And what happened was they ended up being replaced by reusable bags. And people, being people, they kept buying the reusable bags and then taking them home with them and then not bringing them the next time they went to the grocery store. And we've had, like, what, a year and a half, almost 2 years of this happening. And people did not change that habit. They'll just buy a new reusable bag every time they go to the store and maybe throw it out when they get home or just keep it stacked up in their basement or something, like some kind of hoarder. And this is worse for the environment because these bags are much more polluting than the plastic bags. So this, and even though the New Jersey, they're actually aware that this is a problem, they were very quick to get their legislation out to ban single-use plastic bags, but several amendments that were supposed to handle this very big problem created by their ban have been stalled. So they cannot handle the problem that they themselves created. It would have been better if they just left everything alone at this point. They're creating more waste than originally before they try to intervene and be green. And that's something that we see with every sort of green technology, really. Look at the wind farms, for example. You need huge tracts of land in order to get the energy needed to make those viable. And they disrupt bird patterns. In fact, they chop up birds like giant lawnmowers or something. Bats as well, and they really throw off navigation for various animals, and their subtle vibrations harm the cycles of animals as well. Not to mention the fact that the fans, they don't have that long of a lifespan, and they need many barrels of oil in order to function, lubrication and all that sort of thing. And not to mention transportation and construction that you would need gas-powered vehicles to do. And then once the wind turbines are done, you know, they only last like 10 years, 15 years. They are not forever. There's no way to recycle them. If a blade falls off, you know, there's no way to recycle it. There's nothing about that thing that is reusable or recyclable. They just take it to, actually, we were talking about on the Al Nathan show the other day, they just take it to some third world country and dump it in some impoverished nation and pay them a few cents for it or for the use of their land or whatever. So you don't see the results of this, of how this green tech is polluting, because they just dump the waste on someone else's head. And at the same time, they talk about doing carbon reparations or climate reparations or whatever to these third world countries. What is part of the reparations? Dumping our used wind turbines on their land that they probably need to develop in order to become a more developed nation and wealthier? Apparently, that's what we do. And then you also get to other green tech like solar panels, which have a similar problem with needing a lot of space and not being recyclable. They also rot in a landfill somewhere once they're done. Now, they last a little bit longer than wind turbines, I think, 20 years, 30 years, somewhere in that range. They're getting better at them. But then the problem with them, though, is how they are created. It's not just disposing of them. It's not just erecting them and requiring huge tracts of land where, as a matter of fact, I read about this years ago, the heat reflecting from the sun off of these solar panels is, I guess because they're so damn inefficient at catching solar energy, the heat they reflect back into the atmosphere is so great, it actually cook, depending on how big the field of panels is, they have been known to cook birds as they fly across. So I guess, you know, if that's your way of catching food, that's okay, but not really what you want to be doing to save the environment, again, which is the whole goal of this. And then, as I said, once the panels are done with their life, they are just thrown away. They don't recycle them either. They can't. But also creating them is very costly. And I'm not sure exactly about wind turbines. It's probably a very green, unfriendly creation process for them. Solar panels as well. In fact, the Biden administration, they don't want to, and Democrats in general, environmental groups, they say we can't mine the minerals needed for solar panels in this country. It would destroy the environment if we did that. It would be just way too damaging to the environment. But the problem with that is they're okay with it being mined in another country. And on top of that, these other countries that are mining them, they don't care about the environment. They care about the money. So they're doing it as cheaply as possible, even if it is more devastating to the environment than it would be if we did it on our own soil. And then they also use child labor, so there's human issues there too, human rights violations. But as the right likes to say, humans are the carbon that the left wants to reduce, especially right-wingers, mind you. So they're probably okay with child labor and stuff because it means a lower carbon footprint if when they die or whatever. Hey, I'm not a liberal, okay? You know, the guy who founded Earth Day, he killed his girlfriend and had her body composting in his closet. So that's the kind of people who you're dealing with when you talk about the climate. In fact, Secretary John Kerry, the former climate czar, I believe he said he was stepping down for some reason, probably just not making enough money. He actually said that it didn't matter what China's records on genocide were, as long as they made empty climate pledges, that's all he cared about. He didn't care if they stopped killing people. He didn't care if they stopped genocide. He didn't care if they stopped discrimination. He didn't care if they stopped slavery. He just wanted them to promise that they would do something about the climate. That's it. That's how deluded these folks are. So I guess it's no wonder that they don't care that their precious solar panels come from such horrific conditions, and that actually they probably should care that the Earth is polluted more by the way the panels are created than they would be if the panels were created domestically. But they don't, because again, like with the dumping the wind turbine remains onto third world countries, it's not about being green, it's about pretending to be green. And if you have all this litter on your lawn, you can't pretend to be green, so you just sweep it off to someone, to your neighbor's lawn. It's all about virtue signaling, it's not about actually doing anything. And that's where we come in with the electric cars. They also cannot be recycled, and they also last about 10 years. The batteries in the cars, they come from the same place as solar panels, they use some of the same minerals, and they only last about 10 years. They are very fragile, too, and when they catch fire, forget it. It's the worst kind of fire out there, almost, that firefighters will have to deal with. It's just absolutely awful. You can't do it. You just have to let the damn things burn themselves out, pretty much. So, and again, the batteries are very fragile. It doesn't take much to set them off, and then they don't even work in the cold. We're finding that out this year with all these cold stretching. You know, I saw this picture. It was like in Chicago or whatever. It's a charging station where all these electric cars were just stacked up around the charging station because the charging station didn't work in the cold. Well, that's a bit of a flaw in your technology. And of course, people on the right have been concerned about this for years. All this green tech doesn't work in the cold, but you're trying to force it on us anyway. And then that leads to situations like this. All these drivers who get stranded because they needed to charge their electric vehicle, but they can't because it's just too cold outside. And of course, we're being told, oh, climate change is the problem. Well, great. What's the solution? It ain't buying an electric car, apparently, because they don't work. And on top of that, they only last 10 years, like I said, because of that damn battery in them. Assuming the battery doesn't self-detonate, self-immolate, or spontaneously combust at some point. And the you know, you think, oh, well, I'll just replace the battery. The trouble is the batteries are more expensive than the rest of the car. The rest of the car is just some cheap plastic that doesn't recycle. The batteries themselves are toxic dumps that also can't recycle. So what do you do with the car after its 10-year use? You know, you just might as well just buy a brand new one anyway, because it's the frame isn't that expensive. It's just the battery that you're paying for, and the batteries are like $30,000 a pop. So what do? You just... Even if you kept the frame, you still got to throw out that toxic waste trash battery. Where does that go? They don't recycle it. It just sits in the landfill somewhere, polluting the environment. What would happen if everyone was driving an electric car? After 10 years, you'd have millions of these toxic batteries sitting in a landfill somewhere. or maybe imported to a third world country to sit in a landfill somewhere. Either way, it's bad for the environment. But it's 10 years, you know, liberals can't count that high. They think the Earth is going to be destroyed in what is it now? AOC warned in 2018 that we had 12 years left. So, yeah, I guess since we're all going to be dead in 6 years, the left figures that 10 years car life is worth it. So maybe that's the reason it goes through there. But also the cars, the electric cars, they're much heavier than regular cars. So they cause more wear and tear on the roads, which means more maintenance on the roads. And what do you have to do maintenance on the road? You have to pollute. None of this green stuff works. It's all about virtue signaling and profit for big industries. That's it. And even when they try to be green, like with banning grocery bags, it all backfires and causes more pollution, like with everything else they do in the green movement. More Silker Joe Show after this break.
Kickstart the new year with Mario and friends on their latest adventure. Experience the next evolution of Mario fun with the Super Mario Bros. Wonder Game. Classic Mario side-scrolling gameplay is turned on its head with spectacular moments you have to see to believe, including unexpected events called Wonder Effects and the largest cast of characters in a side-scrolling Mario game, including Luigi, Peach, Daisy, Toad, and Yoshi. You can even buddy up on one system or play online with the Nintendo games rated E to E10+. Of a system that best fits their needs and playstyles. And if you're in the mood to play some of your all-time faves, the Nintendo Switch family of systems is home to Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, Animal Crossing New Horizons, The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, Splatoon 3, Pikmin 4, and more. For more, go to Nintendo.com. Additional game systems and or accessories may be required for multiplayer mode. Nintendo Switch Online membership and Nintendo account required for online features. Membership auto-renews after initial term at the then-current price unless canceled. Not available in all countries. Internet access required for online features. Terms apply. Nintendo.com/Switch-Online. Game systems, some accessories, and Nintendo Switch Online membership sold separately. Games rated E to E10+.
So when we're setting up stuff for the new year, we've come in with a lot of energy. It's good to level set, take a step back, relax just a little bit, think about the small things that we can do, that we can fit into our life right now and do them very, very well. That's the key, sustainability. So I would start with using a tracking app. That way you know what you're bringing in and what you're bringing out. MyFitnessPal is a great option for that. It's going to help build sustainable habits over time. And to help with that, the nutritionists over at MyFitnessPal, along with Kate Hudson, have developed the Small Steps, Big Wins plan. This is a 7-day challenge that gives you the little steps that you need to build that foundation so you can meet your goals. You can go straight to the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store, download MyFitnessPal, and get started.
Hi, I'm Catherine Judah Chilo. I have three wonderful children with my husband, Sean, who I met on the 17th season of The Bachelor. At just 5 months old, our son, Isaiah, became sick and spent 4 days in the hospital. At first, my husband and I thought he had a common cold, but it turned out to be much more serious. It was respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV is the number one reason why babies are hospitalized. I'm sharing my story so other parents can learn about the importance of helping protect their babies from RSV when they are most vulnerable to it. If you are pregnant or plan on becoming pregnant, speak to your OBGYN or healthcare provider about the risks of RSV. As a mother, I've seen a lot of warning labels, from choking hazards to baby toys, and I wish RSV came with one. To learn more, visit www.bewareofrsv.com. That's www.bewareofrsv.com. This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
What is dadication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much. From the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night, and every moment in between, it really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dadication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. We are joined now by Hayden Dublois. He is Data and Analytics Director for the Foundation for Government Accountability. And prior to this, he worked for Governor Phil Scott of Vermont, serving as Policy Analyst and Constituent Services Manager. Hayden Dublois, thank you for being on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on.
Yep, glad to have you. Hope I pronounced your name right. So you are on about this Zuckerbucks thing. We've talked about it on the show before, but it's been years because, you know, it just kind of faded into obscurity over the last 3 years, I guess. But it's coming back now. And basically what it is Mark Zuckerberg, through various private initiatives, managed to sort of fund elections in a way and fund how elections were done. And there was some crackdown on that, but all he did was change the name of his organization. Apparently that bypassed it. What's going on here?
Yeah. So, given a brief recap, you're right. It's been almost 4 years since we last encountered this. Looking back to the 2012 election, when Mark Zuckerberg funneled more than $400 million into public election offices around the country through what was then called the Center for Tech and Civic Life, which is an innocent-sounding entity that he used to distribute these funds in predominantly Democrat precincts in swing states, which, of course, we know had an influence on the election. Now what we've seen is that Zuckerbucks has been rebranded through a new organization called the U.S. Alliance for Elections. And they're at it again. Over at the Foundation for Government Accountability, we've been sending public records requests to a number of states and election jurisdictions that we know have engaged in Zuckerbucks in the past to try to monitor and see if it's happening again. And already we found $13 million that's been handed out to various jurisdictions all across the country, from Nevada to Connecticut, and pretty much everywhere in between. So there's reason to be concerned. This is starting back up all over again, just under a different name.
Now, how bad were the Zuckerbucks? Because, you know, people are wondering, okay, so he's giving out money. Everyone does that. What's so special about this?
Yeah, so thinking back to 2020, this all came about under the guise of COVID-19 relief, right? That was the driving motivation for the distribution of these funds. And so you would expect at that time, when we were kind of at the beginning of the pandemic, it to go to things towards PPE and other COVID mitigation protocols, but it didn't. It went to advertisements, and it went to voter registration drives and vote by mail efforts in very targeted Democrat-heavy precincts in swing states, with no guardrails or oversight on how the money was distributed or spent. And so that's the concern, again, is that we're going to see a repeat of that. Now, the good news is, since that time, 27 states have prohibited Zuckerbucks from being used or distributed or in any way allocated by election offices. So that's the good news. The bad news is that means there's 23 states that haven't done that. So the concern is that those 23 states and their election offices are vulnerable to this type of influence. And even in the states that have banned Zuckerbucks, we've seen the newly rebranded Alliance for Elections still attempting to use its influence by providing what they call guidance, talking points on how to oppose election integrity efforts, designs for absentee ballot postcards, other types of things that would fall under the general umbrella of guidance, but which could threaten election integrity efforts in the states.
Yeah, this is coming from the people who say that they want to protect democracy, but then they're letting this billionaire come in and, you know, basically fund elections himself and take them over, and with this under the auspices of doing guidance and stuff like and guidelines and stuff like that. But you know, I mean, it's really disturbing that we're allowing such a privatization of the election process, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it really is disturbing and hypocritical in a great number of ways that we're allowing our public election offices, you know, at a time when voter confidence is not all that high in our election systems, that we're allowing that integrity to be further questioned by having these guardrail-free private funds be distributed with no oversight whatsoever. And the only way we happen to know about it is because we by chance found these records through public records requests, thanks to our continued monitoring that we're doing. But otherwise, the public wouldn't know about this. They'd be completely in the dark. And state actors are in the dark as well. So this is really a great concern about rogue actors and private interest groups influencing the election process through their money and through their guidance to derail election integrity efforts. Hmm.
And it's not just these private groups either. The Biden administration, apparently they're using questionable, I guess, directives, and as federal agencies are being ordered to contract with third-party groups. So it's like it's not like these groups are coming in independently. It seems the Biden administration is wanting them to come in, inviting them in.
Oh, sure. The Biden administration early on issued an executive order requiring federal agencies to contract with third-party organizations to try to register and mobilize voters in states across the country, basically turning our agencies of government into get-out-the-vote machines, using the power and the resources of the federal government behind it. It's really this Zuckerbucks on steroids and sanctioned by the Biden administration. One of the things we're encouraging states to do at the Foundation for Government Accountability is adopt protocols and legislation that puts limits and requires affirmative legislative approval for election guidance and funding with strings attached coming from the federal government, because their overreach into this field is just as concerning as the overreach coming from private actors.
It just seems like all these efforts are in place to take elections out of the hands of the people and put them in the hands of a small, powerful group, whether it's in the government or their allies in the private sector.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, elections are supposed to be local. They're supposed to be run locally, managed locally, and ultimately the election jurisdictions and at the highest level of the states are supposed to have the final say. What we're seeing is a complete circumvention of that way of doing things, where you have instead private actors trying to use their funds to influence the process or change election law to their benefit, or on the other hand, the federal government trying to federalize and nationalize elections. There was even federal legislation that would have done just that, but a convenient workaround, of course, is the power of the Biden administration's executive orders to register voters via its federal agencies. So literally, the election integrity process is quite literally under assault from every which direction.
Well, Hayden DuBois, where can we find out more about the Foundation for Government Accountability?
You can go to www.thefga.org and read our research and learn more about our solutions online.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the Silk or Joe Show this weekend. And listeners, thank you for tuning into the program. Always happy to have you on board. Our website is mainstateradionetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.